thanks for tuning in to the 13th episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. On this episode, I interview Erin from Tubular Gear. We chat about the challenges that come with sewing discarded cycling tubes that were destined for the landfill, the difference between a micro business versus a small business, and things you can do to make your small business more eco-friendly. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Handmade with Heart podcast. I'm your host, Dana, and I own the small business Scrappy Stitch. Have you ever wanted to know more about some of your favorite small businesses? Follow along as I interview other creative small business owners. We'll talk about getting started, what an average day for a creator is like, tips and tricks, and of course, everything is Handmade with Heart. Hey, Erin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us how you got started?
My name is Erin, and I'm the owner of Tubular Gear, which I started in 2015, probably within a year after leaving teaching art and having my son. So I was upcycling a lot of random stuff, and I came across a box of bike inner tubes, and kind of started working with those, and the products were selling. So that's how I kind of decided that this is the route that I was going to take and the materials that I was going to work with.
That is so cool. I absolutely love your shop name. I love the play on words. I think it's so much fun. How'd you come up with that?
So some of the first products I'd initially intended on making were journals. I wanted to make a fake leather cover for journals. And then I had these narrow tubes and I made leashes. So it was mostly dog stuff at first. And so, you know, my husband and I were talking, I'm like, I need a name for this. What do I do? And he was coming up with something with dogs, but I was like, I have a bigger vision for this. I was like, this has to encompass like whatever I decide to make. And so I was like, it needs to be something that can be like, if I decide to just shift constantly, which is exactly what's happened with my products, I'm like, I need it to be able to cover everything. So Tubular Gear worked, one, obviously for the tubes and tubular, but two, it kind of fell into this like silly throwback to when I was a kid and I really loved like all the Ninja Turtle lingo that they used to use. Yeah. And I was like, totally tubular. In my head, I was like, oh, it's going to be totally Tubular Gear. So it was very like dorky, underlying surface dorky.
I love it. Thanks. So you like dogs. You like sewing.
Yes.
And you like cycling. So that makes you instantly my friend because that's like a small niche of people, I feel like.
And yep. Yeah.
When I came across your Instagram page, I was like, this is so cool. I actually found you on Instagram. You were on a camping trip and your camper got stolen.
Yes. Yes. That was wild and unfortunate.
Did you ever get it back or get any leads on it or anything?
So that was a really crazy situation. Our camper got stolen when we were out in Colorado. Out of the hotel parking lot, and we ended up being able to finish our trip. I mean, we'd already like invested so much money to get out to Colorado, and like we didn't want to ruin the trip and just head home because we'd literally only been out there for 3 days out of like 21 days. But the news station linked our story to like a Denver Gives kind of thing, so people were able to donate money, and like I was not expecting that at all. We were just trying to find our camper, but people raised enough money for us to be able to replace it. So we have another teardrop camper. I mean, we had to, you know, invest some more money to like get it with the way that we needed it to be. But yeah, people really taught me about how there's some, you know, not great people in this world, but there's a lot more nice people.
That's amazing. You do some cycling events too, right? You set up at some cycling events as well as markets.
I do. I kind of sell at a combination of like small businesses and boutiques. And then I also do a lot of like craft and vendor events throughout the year. But I have gotten into the cycling scene. I'm doing Rothrock Grit this June, and we're actually working with, for the third year in a row, the Mammoth Gravel Grit Race, which is, you know, the guy that works with me is amazing. And then I got started with the gravel ride up in Titusville. So it's kind of neat. And then I got invited to an all-women's cycling workshop up in New York this past summer.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I was able to kind of turn that into a trip with our new camper and set up there. So I don't cycle a whole lot anymore myself, but I know so many cyclists just from working with bike shops and also doing these really cool events that they, you know, invite me to participate in.
That's great. I saw on Instagram that the Mammoth cycling event,
Yeah.
you're making little pouches for them.
Yes.
That's
Yes.
so cool.
The first year they had me do cuffs. I made a bunch of cuffs that said Mammoth on them. The second year, last year, I did like small squared off like mini zipper bags. And then this year I came out, well, this past year I came out with my large junk sack, which is also plan words. And he reached out to me and he's like, hey, can you do like a smaller version of the junk sack? I'm like, a small sack? You want me to make that? And he's like, well, I wasn't going to go there. But yeah, I was like, absolutely, we can do that because it's great for carrying all your like a tube and a tire pry. And I mean, just like all the little stuff, credit card or whatever you need to carry with you when you're cycling, and it fits in the back pocket. So yeah, so
That
those
is
are
so
custom
cool.
for him.
That's so cool. Now, did they reach out to you or did you reach out to them? Like, how did you get that deal going?
They reached out to me, and part of what they provide their riders with is kind of like a welcome kit, like a t-shirt and some stickers or whatever. And he's just, for whatever reason, decided to include my products in there. So it's been nice working with him. He's great, you know, the last couple of years, and he keeps coming back to ask me for, you know, another product each year. So it's been a nice relationship. And he found me, I think, probably through Instagram as well.
That's amazing. Were you heading to an event that you were going to vend at when your camper got stolen, or no?
No,
That was
no.
Different.
We were just doing a family trip.
Oh, I felt so bad for you when I saw that. I read on Instagram that you majored in art education and minored in art history. How has that helped your small business?
So I think, you know, the art part of it, and actually like why I started doing the tubular gear stuff, was after I left teaching, at the end of each year, I would take any sketchbooks kids left behind, because I'm a huge environmentalist. I'd remove all the useful pages and I would hand stitch them into new journals. And that's why I needed the covers. And there's something like, for me, that's just so therapeutic about making art. So I was able to take, you know, the enjoyment that I have with making art and my understanding of it, and turn that into a craft that was doable in short periods of time, like if my son was napping or in the evenings. And, you know, that's kind of been like, it, like I said, it started with journals because I love journaling and I love like making art, but it's kind of morphed into that. And it's allowed me to really be, you know, continuously creative over the years and coming up with stuff and designing new things and figuring out the measurements or whatever I need to do to be able to like create something. I'm like, I don't know how to do half this stuff. It's just trial and error, but it's a lot of fun.
So you salvage all the bike tubes from local bike shops.
Yes.
They were probably so happy to get rid of them.
Yeah. There is a very interesting phenomenon that happens with bike shops, and I don't think it's something that they discuss, but I feel like almost every bike shop, and I've worked with over a dozen bike shops, and a lot of them is just me showing up and being like, hey, do you have any tubes? And they almost all have like a random bin of tubes that are popped. And I'm not really sure why they just don't trash them immediately, but they just save them. Like, so there's like a bin of tubes sitting. And the thing about bike tube rubber is it's a combination of rubber, but also chemicals. So it's really hard to recycle. So it's not like they're saving them for recycling, because you really can't recycle them easily. They're not like the tires. It's a different combination of stuff. So they're really junk, you know, tubes. So every time I've showed up, they're like more than happy to just give them to me, because they don't have any real purpose for why they're saving them. But I think it's just hopeful that like somebody like me comes along and is like, hey, you have a material that I could actually turn into some stuff. So can I have it for free? And I usually try to like hook them up with like a couple products or something like that as like a thank you for holding on to them and helping me out.
I saw one of your reels that you clean all the tubes before you make them.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's slime inside. So
yeah.
Explain what slime is and why.
I've gotten good about figuring out which tubes have this in them now, but in the beginning I was not. So people when they're riding will sometimes carry with them, like, it's like a Fix-A-Flat basically. So it's a goo. There's several different brands from what I can tell. I've never used it myself.
I never did either.
Splash in the face with it. So. It smells terrible. It's really disgusting. And so every so often I've like cut into a tube and like the air pressure that's still in there just like spittles all over, like the goo just spittles so all over me. I cannot use those tubes. Those tubes are gross and go into the trash. So I do save as much of the bike tubes as I can, but there's probably still about a third to half of the tubes that end up in the trash anyways, because it's, portions of the tubes that I had to cut off that doesn't, I can't really sew it through, like it looks wonky or it's covered in rust or covered in, some of these tubes have been sitting in bikes for years and years and are dry rotted. I save what I can save, and I just have to know that even though it's not every tube, it's at least something out of the landfill. Something's gotten diverted a little bit longer. But yes, the bike filler is disgusting. Very messy. And all the tubes have a powder in them. So I try to work outside to do this because as I cut the tubes open, there's just like a white, fine, like powdery, I think it's talc powder, like or some sort of talc powder, which is probably not great to breathe in. So I try to be outside and get fresh air moving when I'm doing it. It's all very, very messy. That's why I end up washing them in the tub.
Have bike tubes that I've been saving for like 2 years that I was going to try to turn into a bag. I just never did.
You totally can though. There's such a longevity to them, even when they're punctured. I mean, bike tubes are good for like 15 years or more. So, if you can use them for something, they're gonna be fine. I mean, the ones that are dry rotted, I don't know what they've been exposed to or how old they are, but
Do you have a semi-industrial or an industrial sewing machine? Because it's probably really thick to sew through the tubes.
I started on a regular sewing machine and was using oil, like vegetable oil, to help feed the tubes through with my help. It was an older machine I'd had for years. And that died about 6 months into it. And I kind of was at a point where I was like, do I want to keep doing this or do I want to be done with it? Because I had to buy a new machine. And the industrial machine that I ended up getting was, it's like $1,500 for these machines. So it was an investment for me. I was not bringing in, much income at that point. And, we had our son. And so I had just stopped working. It was a big investment for me at that time. And I just decided to go for it. So I have a, it's a Taxo. It's very similar to like a Conso sewing machine. And the guy that sold it to me set it up and like taught me how to use it and everything because I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I'm actually not that great at sewing. I'm like, despite the fact that I've been sewing for 8 years, if it's a straight stitch, I am good to go. But like anything fancy, I like, can't do. So he was like, it just does a straight stitch. I'm like, good. I don't know how to do anything else, so we're good.
What's the question you get asked most about your products?
I mean, I get asked, where do I get all my tubes from? Because people can't like fathom that I have thousands of tubes sitting in my house. And I always like to joke, I'm like, well, I was like, I had to take out a lot of cyclists to get the tubes. The most common thing that happens at shows, it's not even like questions so much. Like, I literally have it plastered in my, booth, made from bike tubes, made from bike tubes, made from local bike tubes everywhere. And people will come into my booth and go, oh, leather. And I just wait and they, or, and see if they can figure out what's going on. And then they go, oh, bike tubes. And then they go and find their friends and then they drag their friends and they're like, these are bike tubes. Like, so it's, for me, it's not so much the question. It's just this like moment of awe that happens. They can't believe that all the stuff that I have is all made out of bike tubes. And there's a lot of touching of my stuff. And then, there's some people will ask silly things like, do you make? And then they'll insert some random, like the most random question I got was like, can you make a sheep harness? And I'm like, no. I get asked about the sewing machine a lot. Like, do you have an industrial sewing machine? That's a very common question. Like, what do you sew on? And not a ton of questions about the products themselves, but more just like they can't believe that everything's made out of bike tubes. But once it dawns on them, it's fun.
It's a really great idea. Did you have to develop your own technique of how to do it? Because, like I said, I have those bike tubes and I Googled and Googled and watched YouTube videos to try to figure out, like, how can I work with these? And there really wasn't a lot out there.
I've actually debated getting together with like the few other bike tube upcyclers. I'm like, we need to have a like get together and just like write a book on how to do this, because as much as I'm doing, or as much as Green Guru or Alchemy Goods or Bicycle Trash DC, like there's like hundreds of millions of tubes going into the landfill every year. Like we're doing what we can, but it's not really as much as could be done if more people knew how to work with the material. So I did have to kind of like play around with it. I mean, the stuff, if I look back at my products from the beginning, I'm like, ooh, those are unique. But once I got the industrial sewing machine, it has a really heavy duty walking foot on it that's like clawed. And I mean, they're made for sewing like sails for boats. I mean, they're going to pull whatever the material is right through there. So once I figured that out and got the really good sewing machine, it's been a lot easier to work with. But I mean, I still reach out like to a Bicycle Trash DC, because the way that she works with her tubes is different than the way that I work with tubes. And so there's still a lot of tricks and stuff that I haven't figured out, or she doesn't use the same technique that I do, or vice versa. So it is a lot of trial and error. It's a weird material to work with because it is so not spongy, but like it has a lot of give to it. So there's certain things I think, oh, this is going to go so easy. And then I try to sew it, like wallets. I cannot figure them out, because every time I go to sew it, it like shifts because it's rubber. So I get, you know, do you make wallets? No, I don't. Well, like, hopefully one day I'll figure out how to do that. Yeah, it's been a lot of trial and error. A lot of frustrated days of me sitting down here and really trying to come up with something. And then at the end of it all, having something I just end up giving away or throwing away because I can't figure out how to do it.
You mentioned Green Guru. Years ago, I bought one of their bags for my bikes, and I use that all the time. And I was like, this is such a cool idea. That's why I was like, well, I'll save some. And they're just sitting in my garage. I should just send them to you.
I mean, I take them. But it's not weird. I've had packages of like really stuffed boxes of tubes show up at my house. And every so often I walk outside and somebody who knows where I live is like dumped their tubes in front of my house. And I'm like, cool, there we go. We'll just add them to the pile and keep working on them.
Something else eco-friendly that you do. I saw you have a deal with Pogie bags.
Yeah. So to be totally open, my most recent amount didn't come from them because I couldn't get a hold of the guy. I've been working with one guy for the last few years, and I reached out to him a few times and didn't hear back. So I was like, okay, well, I need to get bags. So I ended up finding another company that doesn't include the cardboard in the middle. So it's like just, you know, a little bit less paper use. Like it just, the bag ends and that's it. But yeah, I was working with Pogie for years, like 6-7 years. And I'd reached out because I'd been purchasing them on Amazon, but the largest pack came with a bag dispenser. And I'm like, I don't need that because that's what I'm actually using these for. So I said, do you do large bulk quantities, maybe at a discount rate? Like I was willing to buy like several hundred at a time, not just 30. And the guy's like, yeah. And he gave me a discount on them because he would send me the bags that had come in like damaged packaging or things that had been returned. So I would get 1, 2, 3 boxes with loose bag rolls in them, and they were oxy biodegradable. So, you know, earth friendly. And I kind of decided very early on, I was like, if I'm going to do this to be earth friendly, I want it to be across the board as much as possible. So it wasn't a debate of like putting plastic bags in. I was like, I'm going to do the most environmentally friendly thing that I can, which is getting an oxy biodegradable bag. And so, yeah, they've been great. I haven't heard from them recently, but hundreds of bags from them. So encouraging people to make good, healthy choices for the earth.
Do you have any other ways that you keep your business eco-friendly?
Yeah. When I ship my stuff, I keep paper padded envelopes. If I don't have something that I can reuse, which I do save boxes, like a lot of small businesses that ship, but I purchase paper padded envelopes so that they can be put into the paper recycling versus bubble wrap mailers, which, you know, I mean, you can recycle plastic, but it's obviously like a little bit less friendly for the earth. So not saying paper waste is great, but it will biodegrade eventually and a lot faster than styrofoam or plastic wallets. So, I mean, I feel like there's swaps that we can make. And not everything's going to be perfect. I bought like paper labels to ship. I'm like, oh, if I can just cut out, you know, the plastic tape that I have to use. And I'm like, but those, the sticky paper things are stuck to plastic. And they don't stick. They don't even stick to the paper packaging that I have.
Oh, no.
So
do you have to tape them down then?
So then I have to tape them down. I'm like, I've actually created worse. But I'm like, I'm trying. I mean, yeah. All you can do is like, yeah. Everybody's making attempts to just do a little bit better. You know, we can do it. When I order my ribbons, I actually order them in bulk from China, which I know is, you know, I think about the like carbon footprint of that. But I think about it like, I'm like, the ribbons that I'm getting from Michaels or Walmart, I'm like, are also coming from China, but they also have cardboard on them. I have to buy more of that, which is more paper waste and the more plastic. So for me, it's just like trying to find ways to purchase things in bulk quantities so that there's less packaging involved. Anything I do get that comes in plastic, I mean, I have areas in my studio, like there's trash, but there's also sheet plastic recycling and like hard plastic recycling. So I purchase my spools of thread in, like, they're $32 for a spool and they're huge and they come in this plastic thing. So those will get recycled at the end, but buying in bulk saves me from having to buy as many of them.
Do you have any tips or resources for anybody who's looking to make their business more eco-friendly?
I think anybody that's trying to be, you know, more eco-friendly, just thinking about like how much of the things that you're using or purchasing, can you buy in bulk? Can you purchase a more friendly option? Just thinking about like, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the story of stuff, but like everything that we purchase has a footprint before we even get it. You know, there's waste created before we even get it. So trying to find ways to reduce that. Like when I do my shows, for example, a really simple thing is using paper bags. Or when people purchase stuff from me, I get paper bags versus plastic bags. And I see people that do plastic bags. They're beautiful. They have really cute prints on them, but the paper bags are all fully recyclable. And so I've, you know, chosen to go with that instead. Right at the end of the show season, I purchased 3 secondhand suitcases because I am very tired of carrying the large bins around with me. They're really heavy. And I was like, you know, I could have purchased a brand new rolling cart that would go with me. I'm like, but suitcases are going to work just fine. So I purchased 3, you know, nice quality, but secondhand suitcases. And so those are going to be where, how I carry my products from, you know, show to show.
That's a great idea. Out.
So I always try to do secondhand. I hit up Goodwill. Like I needed a new bin. One of my drawer bins that I used for the bags actually broke. And so I went to Goodwill before I went to the store. So anything I can buy for my business, if I'm able to get it secondhand, I will do that first. And if I'm not, then I do purchase new, but I try to be as environmentally friendly as possible.
That's a good idea about the suitcases. I never thought about that.
Well, they've had the built-in wheels. I was like, this is basically what I need. And yeah, the nice thing about, you know, what I make is it's not breakable stuff. I mean, if I was a ceramic artist, definitely a different situation. I'm like, but all the stuff that I have can get tossed in a suitcase and thrown into the car and it's not going to be damaged.
Do you ever wonder when you're working with all the tubes, like what adventures have this bike tube been
on? Absolutely. Absolutely. I do think about that, the family bike rides and like how many of these tubes were purchased during, like, for bikes that people bought during COVID because bike sales boomed during COVID.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I do think about that, especially the ones that have a lot of the patches on them. And I honestly don't use those ones because they're just really hard to work with all the patches on them. Not a whole lot of people patch them though. Those are the ones that I'm like, oh, somebody like took this tube out, patched it, put it back in and kept using it. And I'm like secretly cheering for them. I'm like, good for you for like being, being environmentally friendly. But I do think about the rides and I get tubes that are for like smaller bikes, like clearly kids bikes and whatever. And just thinking like, where were they going or how far, how many miles has this tube traveled? And like, I do think about all that stuff.
I used to cycle to work for years, like years. Yeah. My last 2 jobs, I was really close. I was like 2 miles away and then 5 miles away.
Yeah.
And so almost every day. I would like cycle to work, and I was so lucky. I had one flat because I always thought like, oh, I'll have to walk the rest of the way or like I'll be late. But
that's awesome though. I was lucky. You probably, you know, reduced your carbon footprint like a huge amount by just not driving.
Well, and my area is not really very cycle friendly where I live. So there was a lot of people like, what is she doing? Oh my gosh. And when I first started, I had a mountain bike, like a clunky old mountain bike, and it took forever. I have upgraded over the years, but
it is funny, like the different types of bikes. So the Rothrock event that I'm doing, they're like, you should ride it this year. And I was like, but I don't have a gravel bike. I have a road bike and I have a hybrid mountain bike, but I'm like, do I just try to ride it? Like my husband's like, I'll vend your tent for you. And I'm like, well, maybe I will try. I'm like, not sure if I should try to get a gravel bike before doing the race, or like if I should just go with like blind ignorance and be like, I don't know any better. Like, I'll just use my mountain bike. I'm sure there's a good reason why there's gravel bikes, but I'm like, I don't know what that reason is yet. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should just pretend to keep it that way.
I was supposed to do unpaved the first year.
Oh, in Lewisburg. Yeah.
But I think the weather or something, it was really rainy. And like, I am not a daring cyclist. If it's like perfect conditions, like I'll go and ride whatever. Right. But if it's like rainy and I don't know, I'm always so scared I'm going to get hurt. So
two years ago, it did rain. I saw lots of photos of the cyclists.
Yeah.
Like just mud the whole way. Looked miserable.
Do you ever do any bike packing? Mm-mm. Bike touring? No.
So my husband used to be a cyclist before his accident. So he rode for VCU back in college and kind of was the one that like inspired me to start riding. So before I had my son, way before tubular gear, I was riding road, you know, pretty regularly. And he was like, you're a really naturally strong cyclist. And so I was doing that, you know, as often as I could, but it was in Virginia. It was really hot. So like you had very limited hours where the sun was up and not trying to murder you from the heat. And my son, he'll be turning 9 here soon. And so he's just started getting into like being able to ride significant distances. So I think we're going to try to set some like longer goals and like try to reach, I don't know, like set a mileage for the summer and try to reach that goal. So I'd like to get back into riding again. It's been, you know, years since I did it regularly, but I haven't gotten into like the bike packing or anything like that. But I'm not saying I won't. I just need somebody else to go with me.
Yeah. I'll go with it. I love bike packing. I love it. I've been several times.
Where do you go?
So I did solo. I did Harper's Ferry down to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And then there's a couple places like out near me, and it's not a very long trail. And I've taken my nephew and we'll ride. And then there's like, you have to ride on the road a little bit to get to the campground, and then we'll cycle back the next day. And oh my gosh,
cool.
I love it.
Do you have like a 2-person tent that you just carry with you?
Yeah, because originally I was into backpacking.
Okay.
And then I got sick of carrying everything on my back. And I'm like, well, it sounds a lot better to just load up my bike and cycle. And it is.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a beautiful trail. This is where we'll go. It's the PA Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah. I've been there before.
Yeah. So that whole trail I've cycled. I've bike packed that whole thing. You posted a reel on Instagram about how you make one-of-a-kind items and why you don't add them to your website.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So working with tubes, one, you know, I'm working with all different sizes of tubes. I have a whole stack of junk sacks and they're all just slightly different sizes. If I do post something like that online, I try to say like, there's some size variation here. I'm happy to like send people stuff, but it is hard to put products online and give an accurate representation every single time because they're all just slightly different. And then specifically things like my journals, which is the one thing that is like the most artistic of all the things that I do. I very much try to do one of a kind journals so that everybody feels like they're getting something unique. And I've posted one of a kind journals online during like the slower seasons, like January, February, March, and forgotten that I put it up there and then taken it to an event, sold it, and then somebody will order it. I have a really hard time recreating certain things. And part of that is it's not the tubes that I, you know, can't recreate it. I also work with salvage leather, and sometimes I just don't have any more of that color or like that texture of leather. And so it's just really difficult to recreate something a second time. So I've tried to keep things that are very unique and one of a kind off of my website. I do post them on Instagram sometimes for sale and try to keep up with, you know, just sold or available is a lot easier than me frantically trying to recreate something that I no longer have.
I saw on Instagram that you also have gift boxes for sale. Yeah. So that includes a leash, a keychain, a dog bag dispenser, and some dog treats.
Yes, I had worked with a local woman. Her name is Marie Lane Bakery, and she makes dog treats that are like very, you know, healthy and friendly and stuff. So one of the things I tried to add to my products this past fall and winter was the gift boxes, where you're, you know, taking the frustration out of trying to shop for a bunch of little things and being like, hey, you can get a whole gift box and all the stuff's in here, and you can just have it shipped wherever you want to and have everything already in this. So I did that gift box. I did a couple other ones, like one was like sticker based and had a couple tube products, but a lot of stickers, and some of it was keychains with a bottle opener and or bike themed stuff. Adding you know, the gift boxes, especially during the holiday season, was kind of a new thing for me. And so it was a lot of trial and error and seeing what people might possibly like to order.
Who's your website through?
GoDaddy.
Oh, okay.
So I have it through GoDaddy. I need to actually downgrade it because I'd done like the free trial.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been on Pattern through Etsy. On there, I wasn't able to say, like, I also have a Facebook and I also have an Instagram. I didn't really like how it looked. It was a really like simple design and mm-hmm. It was kind of boring. So I was like, I'm going to go back to GoDaddy. It was like supposed to be like $10.99 a month or something like that. But I got a 7-day free trial and they have my credit card. So my assumption, like with most things, is mm-hmm. You do the free trial. And when the free trial ends, if you haven't canceled it, it automatically rolls into you're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that. They just shut my website down. So it was like 2 weeks later and I like went to go look at my website when I posted. I'm like, what? Like, no. On what planet? Do they not just automatically charge you? Like mm-hmm. Everywhere automatically charges you if you don't cancel after the free trial, but apparently yeah. Not GoDaddy. So then I had to get like paid, I don't know, $25 to get it reinstated. And then of course I'm like a dit, so I like forgot to cancel it. And then they're like, you just got charged another $25. I'm like, this is not saving me the money that I thought I was going to save me. I'm like, I'm not a website person.
Right.
Like, this is like a whole day of me spending, right. You know, not a whole day, but like 3-4 hours of me like messing around trying to design this website. And then I thought I'd lost the whole thing. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I have to call a GoDaddy. I'm like, somebody please help me.
I heard you use the term micro business. I've been hearing that term more and more. Tell me about the difference between micro business and small business.
So I think at least the way that I've heard it and understand it, a small business is, you know, several people working brick and mortar or online, but it's a few people that are working to create a business and sell products. And there's multiple people to do all of the things that go along with a small business, like websites and taxes and making and shows. And I mean, there's such a huge list of things, social media.
Right.
Then, especially because I'm in the craft market so much, a lot of the people that I know and I'm friends with are doing the whole thing themselves. They're running the whole show. They're doing all the making and all the business stuff on their own. So it's really just one person. So I'm like, a micro business or a nano business really describes what we're doing more appropriately than like, you know, the small shop down the street that has like 3 or 4 employees at it. And mm-hmm. They're both, you know, very valid. There's just a different business model for those types of things. So I found, you know, when somebody had referred to it as a micro business, I was like, that is absolutely more appropriate terminology for what I'm doing and what a lot of the people that I know are doing, where they're the only ones that are that are running the whole show.
I've been hearing that more and more, and I just love that. It makes total sense.
It does, because I feel like even with 2-3 people, it's like you you can alleviate some of the stuff. I mean, I'm talking with, like, you know, I have a couple friends who just opened a small business, and it's the two of them. I'm like, but they have each other to be like, we need to work on taxes together, or we need to work on deliveries, and I'll make it and you deliver it. And I'm like, there's a playoff of being able to say, like, you know, I'm doing this portion, but you're going to do this portion. And then it's running, you know, together, especially people that are just mostly makers. It's always interesting to me. And I'm like, I hate the like tax part of it.
Me
I
too.
hate, I'm like, if somebody could do that portion of like the social media and like trying to figure out the website stuff, I wish somebody else would do that more. Because I just want to make this stuff. But yeah, when you're a micro business, you have to just kind of like wear all the hats at the same time.
Did you sign up for MyPath yet? Did you switch from eTides to MyPath?
I have not. No, I have a friend. I talked to her and I was like, the eTide system is just so was so confusing. And I had to pay somebody last year to like help me navigate that. It's very different than when I started when I was in Virginia. Virginia was like one form online, you filled it out, you they told you how much you had to pay with the e-check, and you just signed your name and that was it. And like eTides was overwhelming, so I had to pay somebody to like help me navigate that, and then it changed, and I was like, I can't even look at it. Like somebody needs to come over and help me. So a jewelry maker, she's like, I'll come over and help you, and we'll have wine, and we'll just work through it. And I'm like, okay,
Oh,
thank you.
nice. Good.
So.
Yeah, I had a little trouble initially trying to sign up for it. Like, it wouldn't accept my revenue ID number and all that. And I was like,
Yeah.
what the heck? You have to verify your business. And whatever I was putting in there, there's like different options that you can click. It wasn't accepting anything until I finally put your previous amount, like that you've paid in your sales tax.
Yeah.
It can take up to the last five amounts. So I put like the second to last amount
Yeah.
in there, and then it was like, oh, okay. And it pulled everything over. I'm like, oh my gosh, why was it
Yeah.
so difficult?
I don't know who designed these systems, but I'm like, it doesn't need to be this hard. So when I moved here, I actually had a Pennsylvania transient vendor license, which like I feel like actually most accurately describes what I'm doing. Like I'm a transient vendor that goes and sets up randomly around the state, but it only applied to people who were out of the state. So I had to get rid of my transient vendor ID before I could even sign up for the, you know, appropriate one. And of course I went through that whole thing, and then like I get to the end, they're like, hotel occupancy. I'm like, I don't know how I ended up here. So that was very frustrating, and I went to like the small business people for help. I reached out to Launchbox. I reached out to Springboard. I'm like, nobody was helpful. So, anyways, it's just been, I just don't even want to like look at the new. I
I
haven't looked at it yet. I just haven't. Like, I'll just go back and fix it. For like, I'll just go back and fix it. I'm not worried about it.
What's your favorite part about having a small business?
My favorite part about it is honestly the freedom to do as much or little as I want to do. I'm really very privileged to have a husband that can like support, you know, the house and stuff. Like, this is my way of contributing to bills and groceries and activities for my son and stuff like that. But we're in a unique situation where, you know, we've discussed me going back to a full-time job at some point, but I can keep doing this if I want to. Like, as my son's gotten older, I've been able to devote more time to it. If I'm not feeling well, I don't have to work that day. Or if my husband needs help with stuff, or if we want to go on a trip. Just this past year, it was the first time that I started incorporating trips into like what I was vending. So I did the Hummelstown Criterion, and then we zipped over to Hershey the next day, and the sales that I made at Hummelstown was enough to pay for the hotel and for my whole family to go to Hershey for the day. So it was like a wash at the end of it. But I'm like, this is nice. Like, we were already down here, you know, we can make a trip out of this instead of having to like make an extra day trip. Like, we're already here. We did the same thing when I did the women's cycling event workshop up in New York. It was right off of Lake Chautauqua, and we were able to, you know, we camped for a couple of days. And then we went to the lake, and it was beautiful. And we went to, I don't know, like an amusement park from, I don't know, it's the oldest amusement park I've ever been to. It was so fun. Like, it was really fun. We've been able to turn some of the traveling stuff into trips. Last year, I really pushed myself. I mean, I did 24 events last year. I picked up three more businesses, carrying my stuff, and I was just playing catch up constantly. And it was wonderful and it was really exciting. I said, but this year, I'm like, I'm gonna dial it back a little bit and try to do some larger events, like less little events, more larger events, and try to just move product through bigger events that way so that I have a little bit more time, especially in the summertime with my son, to like take him to the pool, or if we want to go on trips, it'll be a little bit easier. So that's what's so nice about it. I navigate how I want this to look. I've, been talking about potentially doing some like substitute teaching. I'm like, I can substitute and do my small business, or I can go back to work full time and do my small business. And it's flexible and it's nice. So two of my best friends are together in the business, and at 10:30 at night, she's like, you want to chat and work? I'm like, absolutely. So we get on FaceTime and we work for a few hours together, and so I can work in the nighttime. I can work through the night if I want to. It worked during COVID. I was able to teach my son from home and then work at nighttime. So it's been the flexibility is incredible.
That's cool. So, what's your best friend's name and small business? Give her a shout out.
So my best friends are Heather and Sarah, and they have a small business that's called Amazing Grays, and it's a charcuterie box
That's cool.
delivery business. Well, they d deliver to a couple local businesses, and they do beautiful work. I'm like, I could not do what they do. But yeah, we had a girls' night, and they put together a charcuterie box and said, why don't we make a business out of this? And they've been doing really, really well.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I've done that before too. I'll go on Zoom with some of my other maker friends and,
Yeah.
we'll just hang out and talk
Yep. Yep.
and work.
We would be hanging out anyways, but I'm like, this way you can be comfortable in your house and accomplishing what you need to do. And so I have a morning friend that I talk to her every morning on FaceTime, and I work. And then throughout the middle of the day, I do the grocery shopping, or I take a nap, or or read a book, whatever I need to do or have to do or feel like doing. And sometimes I continue to work. And then in the evening, I call another friend and we chat. So it works.
How many brick and mortar stores are you in right now?
I'm in Kickstand Culture up in New York, East Aurora, New York. I'm in Poppy Road Boutique, and that's sort of near Erie. I'm in Curio Cool in Deli Noble. I'm in the Bellefonte Art Museum. I'm in Jabibo Earrings in Bellefonte, and I'm in Belle Mercantile in Bellefonte, and I'm in the Gallery in Lamont. So I think that's all of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun. There's different stuff in each of them, so it's not like three of them are in Bellefonte, but the stuff that one place has, the other places don't necessarily have. So you can kind of like get different things, different products that I have.
What are your goals for this year?
Well, my goal at the moment is to try to be more prepared for the remainder of the year. I have been attempting to stockpile products in a way that I haven't in previous years because I'd like to continue to grow and I'd like to do some bigger shows. I have some new events that I'm doing this year that I've never done before. Next weekend, I'm going to be up in Scranton for Mountain Fest, which looks amazing, but I've never done that before. And then, I have some other art events that I'm doing. So just expanding, bigger shows, seeing what I can do with those, and if that's kind of a route that I want to pursue. The smaller shows are really fun and they're convenient when they pop up and they're local, but I really want to kind of expand out to other areas. I mean, hopefully get into some more brick and mortars. I'd really love to just do a few pop-up events or a few shows a year, and then mostly sell my stuff through other people's brick and mortars so that I don't have to haul my tent all over the place. And I love shows, but they are a lot of work.
I feel the same.
Yeah. It's so great to network with people and meet new people, and you really get like a whole new audience of people exposed to your stuff. But the weather is hit and miss sometimes, and similarly to not wanting to, it's not fun biking. It's also not fun like setting up in the rain or snow and sitting there freezing all day and or being sweltering hot and sweating the whole time. So yeah, I think getting into some more businesses would be wonderful.
Well, we're nearing the end of the podcast, and that means it's time for your random fact. Do you have your fact for me?
So I was trying to think of a random fact. And I mean, really, for me, the thing that I'd want people to take away from what I'm doing is, you know, it's actually a quote. Is it okay if I share that?
Sure.
It's by Anne-Marie, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, Bonneau. And she said, we don't need a handful of people doing zero waste perfectly. We need millions of people doing it imperfectly. So even though what I'm doing is helping, and even though bikes are definitely a more eco-friendly way than, you know, over driving a car, there still is waste that's involved with that. So finding ways to take things that might not be recyclable and turn them into products and adding to a circular economy is a really, I think, one of the best ways that we can help keep things out of the landfill. And every year, hundreds of millions of tubes are tossed annually. So any way that we can kind of alleviate that would be a way to keep things out of the landfill and help the environment. So
my mom and I were driving and we were talking about the trash on the side of the road.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah. And then she said, you know, it seems like it's getting worse and worse. And I said, well, I think part of the problem is it's out of sight, out of mind, right? Like we take our trash and it's taken to wherever, landfill or wherever, and then we don't see it again. So you don't realize how much,
right,
you know, trash you're throwing out and how much it's out there.
Somebody said once, we say we throw stuff away, but there is no away.
Mm-hmm.
It's still sitting there. The first toothbrush you ever use is sitting in a landfill somewhere. And so, you know, for me, like, this isn't just a business. It's like a lifestyle. And going environmentally friendly is not like a, you can't just like do it all at once. It's a process. Right. So it's small swaps that add up over time to being something. And I'm like, that's why I say, you know, like, yes, we need big companies to make significant changes if we're going to really like affect the environment, because we're really just producing so much waste at such an exorbitant rate at this point. But it doesn't mean that we can't make our own impacts in our own worlds.
All right, Erin, it was wonderful having you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. It was great talking with you.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. Don't forget to follow Erin at Tubular Gear, and you can find me at Scrappy Stitch and the Handmade with Heart podcast.